This is Glenn Wardman recording an oral history interview with Mr. Ian Broadfoot in relation to the Fernley Track Interpretation Plan. It is Thursday, the 27th of March 2008, and it is approximately 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon.
My name is Ian Broadfoot. I grew up in New Lambton, Newcastle. I did not, however, become involved with the Fernley Track until 1994, when I, as an employee of council, took on the project to manage the development of the track. The early days involved the meetings of the committee. The committee met with representatives of both Lake Macquarie Council and Newcastle Council, elected members and staff. The early days of that committee preceded my involvement. However, at the stage that I was involved, the councils had purchased the corridor and were starting to consider how it should be developed. Early on, they discovered that the tunnel, the Fernley Tunnel, was in worse physical condition than they had been given to understand and needed considerable restoration work. The committee spent some time agonising how that would proceed, and Newcastle Council took on the role of getting consultants to investigate and recommend means to restore that tunnel. The decision was also taken to try to recover damages from the engineering consultant who had provided the initial report. In that regard, the councils were only partially successful. The first major involvement that I had was to put together a brief to engage a consultant to prepare an implementation plan for the track. The implementation plan was intended to provide a guideline on how the track was to be developed, the purpose it was to be used, and opportunities to promote it and interpret it. The consultant who was successful was the firm of Manitas Roberts from Sydney, and they had two consultants working on it, a Simon MacArthur and a name escapes me for a moment, it might come back later. That process took some time, but the overall the recommendation was that the corridor would be developed as a cycling and walking corridor, but at the same time the development would be carried out in such a way that if in the future there was a need to change that corridor back to, say, light passenger rail, then nothing would have been done that would have prevented that happening. The next step after adoption of that plan was to seek funding, and the initial stage one construction from Adamstown to Burwood Road was funded with a grant of I think $1 million from the New South Wales Road and Traffic Authority. That grant was provided to Newcastle Council, and I believe most of, or all of that was used on the contract to restore the tunnel. Lake Macquarie constructed the cycle path south from the tunnel to Burwood Road, and Newcastle Council constructed the path north from the tunnel to Adamstown. That section was opened to the public in February 2003. The next stage from Burwood Road to Whitebridge, design and investigation started in I think it was late 2002. That work was carried out by Lake Macquarie Council, using some sub-consultants, but primarily the work was done in-house. Newcastle Council was invited to participate in that process but chose not to do so. Equally with construction, construction of Stage 2 was carried out by Lake Macquarie Council with some contract work. One of the big issues for the committee in the early days was to actually decide on the standard of construction of the pavement. This, believe it or not, caused considerable heartburn to the committee members. Should that pathway be constructed out of concrete, or should it be constructed out of asphalt, or should it be even constructed out of gravel? There were differing views on this, and ultimately the decision was made to construct with asphalt as being a compromise between overall construction cost and maintenance and ultimate life of the pavement. The width also caused some debate. At the time, the Roads and Traffic Authority, who were the major funding body, felt that the pavement should be constructed 3.5 metres wide. In some places that was possible, but in many parts of the track, the top of the embankment or the width of the cutting was simply not sufficient to allow a 3.5 metre pavement. And so the compromise was struck that the pavement ideally should be 3 metres. The implementation plan had actually suggested pavements downgrading as the pathway progressed further south along the corridor on the basis that fewer people would be using it. However, the committee came of the view that a sealed surface should be provided over the full length for ease of riding, for accessible use by people in wheelchairs, and for the longer-term maintenance. A gravel surface would have provided much more maintenance obligations than what the sealed surface would. So these decisions took quite a few meetings of debate before a final decision was reached. The other issue that at times caused the committee angst was the standard of fencing that ought to be provided along the track. Now, there are national guidelines on fencing for bicycle paths, which are based on the height of the embankments and the closeness of the drop to the riding surface, that dictated fencing of quite a high standard. This has added considerably to the cost, perhaps in places up to in excess of 20% of the per lineal metre cost of the track. As the track progresses further south, of course, the embankments flatten out and fencing will become less of an issue. Stage 3 of the track, from Whitebridge to Redhead, has not been built yet. The designs have been finished and grant funds sought. This is a major length of about 4 kilometres when you consider that construction from Adamstown to Whitebridge is only about 5.5 kilometres now. So the next stage will considerably add to the attraction of the track. To fund that 4 kilometres, councils have had to source funds from a variety of potential grants, both state and federal. At present, I understand the federal grant that was announced is being reviewed, and that may have an impact on how quickly construction can proceed. However, certainly once construction is through to Redhead, the track will be considerably increased attraction from what it is now. From Redhead South, The track is almost flat through Sandheath country, and will present easier construction conditions, and also as it progresses through the Belmont wetland area, a considerably different environment from the hillier country that the first couple of stages of the track pass through. The variety of natural landforms and vegetation types will add to the interest of the track, and I would expect increase the variety of users who would enjoy the different aspects of the track at that southern end.